Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are excited because, ring a bell, we need a sound effect for this, Beth. Anytime we're bringing back a returning guest, we should ring a bell. Jonathan Clements is our guest today, financial writer and author, and he's been on the program. We featured him not long ago, has written the book, Jonathan Clements, Money Guide 2016, and we had a lot of fun with that the last time Jonathan was on, talking about all the different, really the key things that people need to know about, just simple things, and also taking some of this complex stuff and breaking it down into plain English. You get a lot more good information about this book and more books that Jonathan's written over at his website, jonathanclements.com. And we saw a couple articles here recently, and it piqued our interest. We wanted to have him back, some articles from financial planning that Jonathan had written about. He's, of course, been a writer for about 400 years, well, we'll say the 20 years, at the Wall Street Journal, and he has been their personal finance columnist, and he's written over 1,000 columns from 1994 to 2008. That's pretty impressive. He has worked at Citigroup and has done personal wealth management, and so he is very well regarded in the financial industry. Born in England, you'll hear just a smidgen of accent when he comes on the line. Graduated from Cambridge University, and he's got a nice newsletter you can check out as well on the website. So let's get him on the program. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be with you, David.
Glad to have you back, and there's so much that's gone on since you and I last spoke that, you know, we got to about 10% of what we wanted to talk about the first time. So we add that to the new stuff we want to talk about. Maybe we can get to 1%. We can be some of those evil 1%ers.
It's one of my ambitions in life.
Yes, for all of us. Yes, that's where we aspire. So I know that you write and have observed for a long time this financial world and, of course, the financial industry and the regulation or attempts at regulation and government, what's the right word? Government aid or the government trying to marshal or corral, that's the word I'm looking for, corral this financial system. And it's been a kind of a bumpy ride, at least from my perspective. I'd really like to get yours. You know, not long ago here, we had the announcement of the Department of Labor providing new guidelines and basically rules where they can make these rules rather unilaterally to require additional standards of care and service and, you know, who is supposed to do what for a client and in what capacity as it relates to their investments. And it appeared that in initial form, this room was going to be very, very strict and really radically change the industry and change what, you know, how advisors work with people on their retirement accounts. And then they came back, they made additional changes, and it seems to have just gotten kind of messy. And I'm really curious from your vantage point, how you view all of this and what you think some of the repercussions may be.
That's a great question, David. And I think the answer is, it's amazing what can happen if you hire some good lobbyists. Because somebody clearly got in there and persuaded the Department of Labor to tweak the rules they were bringing out. At issue here are retirement accounts. We're talking,
sure,
401k plans. We're talking IRAs. The Department of Labor, because it gets to oversee the workplace,
right,
has responsibility for retirement accounts. That's why these regulations are coming from the Department of Labor.
Yeah.
And what they've been looking to do is to make sure that financial advisors, and that what I'm talking about are everything from registered investment advisors through to your local broker,
right,
behave in a proper manner when they're handling retirement accounts.
And
right, obviously, that's a good thing, right?
We
don't want somebody out there messing up your retirement account so you can't afford to retire.
Right.
Currently in the business, there are two different standards by which you judge a financial advisor's behavior. Brokers have typically been held to what's called a suitability standard, which means that, you know, they don't have to act in your best interest, but they have to at least recommend investments that are suitable, or as somebody once put it to me, recommend investments that are not unsuitable.
That, you know what? That's actually an excellent way of putting it. It's a little bit like, I worked in a butcher shop or the meat department of a grocery store when I was a kid, Jonathan. It's a little bit like saying, we've got the fresh meat, and then we got the meat that's still okay.
Well, that's what a lot of brokerage clients have ended up with, the meat that's sort of okay. Meanwhile, you know, the other end of the spectrum, you have registered investment advisors who must act as fiduciaries.
And right.
That means that they are legally obligated to act in the client's best interest.
Right.
And, the Department of Labor wanted to ensure that when retirement accounts are handled by financial advisors, broadly defined, that these advisors should have to meet a fiduciary standard.
Which also
and
includes...
there was a lot of consternation on Wall Street, particularly among
right.
the big brokerage firms, because
right.
they were concerned that a lot of the products they've sold historically to retirement account investors would no longer pass muster.
Right.
And so there's been a lot of hand-wringing, clearly a lot of lobbying went on, and finally the rules came out. And what we've discovered is that a lot of what I thought a fiduciary shouldn't do is going to be allowable under the new rules. So, for instance, if you have an in-house set of mutual funds,
mm-hmm.
your own branded set of mutual funds, and you recommend those to clients, that's still acceptable. So in essence, if you have your own in-house set of mutual funds, you not only can get a commission for selling those funds to a client, but also the brokerage firm gets an ongoing revenue stream because it's managing the money and hence it's charging annual expenses on that money.
Right.
That looks like a conflict of interest to me, but under the Department of Labor rules, that isn't a conflict of interest. That is still allowable. Similarly, in the past, something that unscrupulous brokers have done is to persuade people to buy variable annuities and equity indexed annuities within an IRA. Now, equity indexed annuities, variable annuities are tax-deferred investments. An IRA is a tax-deferred investment. Mm-hmm. So what brokers are essentially doing is persuading people to put a tax-deferred investment inside a tax-deferred investment. So why do they do it? Because the commissions on a variable annuity and equity indexed annuity are typically much higher than they are on a mutual fund. So it's a bigger payday for the broker. That strikes me as being unethical. And yet, under the new rules, that apparently is still acceptable. So you scratch your head and say, so what does it mean to be a fiduciary now?
Right.
Oh, this is allowable under the new rules.
I'm going to help you with that, Jonathan, because I have actually direct experience with that. And I can imagine you and everybody's scratching their heads on that. And I can tell you that one of the things that is commonly misunderstood about several things here, and I love that we can talk about it. Common thing about annuities, variable or index or whatever version, is this idea of, that by putting an annuity into a IRA is somehow putting a tax shelter into a tax shelter. It's interesting. I've used the annuities as part of an overall plan. And I can tell you from my experience, and I guess I'm not sure how this gets all twisted up, but if I've recommended an annuity an index annuity, for example, as part of an overall plan in an IRA, I can tell you it's got zero to do with the tax benefit. And so this whole concept has gotten kind of twisted up, and there's so much confusion out there. And the Department of Labor, you definitely have a great point about, using the in-house mutual funds, because what's really happened here is with the Department of Labor's intent in doing this, they've actually made the fiduciary watered it down or weakened it. Because when I manage investments for my clients and we're managing it on a fee basis, we are acting in a fiduciary capacity. Period. End of story. No misunderstanding there. But then you add in, now you've got somebody who's recommending a proprietary mutual fund, and they can call themselves or say that they're acting in fiduciary capacity. Ironically, this has actually tainted what it means to be a fiduciary, and is going to create tremendous confusion and be worse than if they'd even not done this law at all.
I completely agree with you, David. I mean, one of the things that I would say to people in the past was, you go in and you talk to a financial advisor and you want to know that you're getting one of the best and brightest. Very simple question.
Right.
Are you a fiduciary?
Exactly.
And in the past, that would have meant that you were ending up with one of the good guys. Now,
yeah.
You just don't know.
Oh, can you imagine the marketing that's going to be done with this? I mean, all of the firms that are, I'll use your example, is the, pushing or recommending as opposed to another choice, you know, the proprietary mutual funds, they can spend that to the heavens with it being a fiduciary service that they're offering. So it's going to get real complicated and real messy. And, you know, we got to grab a quick break, John, then we'll come back. But I want you to think about this, and I want to talk about it after the break. The fundamental challenge here is the Department of Labor, you know, I've always thought as they were looking at all these rules that if they had simply looked at two pieces of this, they've got the 401k and all the employer-based plans, and then you've got the IRAs, and I think that if they had delineated and said, look, here's all the rules that we want to set or enhance the fiduciary responsibility to the 401k and similar plans and raise the bar all the way up to a true fiduciary standard as we, you and I and other people who are, you know, informed about this know that it is, and left the IRAs alone, they probably would end up with a better product for implementation. But we'll grab a break, come back and talk to about it. Jonathan Clements on the line, author of Jonathan Clements Money Guide 2016, jonathanclements.com. Word from our sponsors, right back with Jonathan.
Hello, I'm Brenda Campbell, General Manager at Volusia Memorial Funeral Home and Cemetery. Cremation is a choice that is chosen by many today. Our caring professionals will gladly work with you to plan cremation services and memorializations that fulfill your wishes and honor the life lived. At Volusia Memorial Funeral Home and Cemetery, we offer a wide variety of options, from urns for burial to many other choices. There are many ways to honor your loved one following a cremation. We can be reached at 386-673-5373 or our website, VolusiaMemorialFunerals.com. Volusia Memorial Funeral Home in Port Orange and Ormond Beach. Life well celebrated.
The Rice and Rose Law Firm is celebrating 30 years of service in Volusia and Flagler counties. I'm Paul Rice, and I'm board certified in divorce and family law. I focus on representing divorcing spouses over the age of 50. For those previously divorced individuals who desire to marry again but want to avoid the expense and acrimony of another contested divorce, I specialize in drafting prenuptial and postnuptial agreements. You can contact me in our Daytona Beach office at 257-1222 or visit my website at ricerosenlaw.com.
Hello, this is David Holland. You already know from listening to this program that I'm very careful about my financial advice. It will come as no surprise then that I feel the same way about my other recommendations. If you love traditional, authentic Greek food as much as I do, then there's just one place to go, the Greek Town Taverna at 150 North Nova Road in Ormond Beach. It's just around the corner from my office, so you'll see me there for lunch at least a couple times a week. They've got stuffed grape leaves, gyros, lamb chops, octopus, and baklava. You can find all of these wonderful homemade Greek favorites every day of the week. They offer a wide variety of wine and beer to pair with your meal as well. Visit GreekTownTaverna.com or call 386-944-9526 for more information. I'll see you there. Hey, we're back with Jonathan Clements having a good discussion about some of the new rules related to and the mess that has resulted to some degree with the Department of Labor and some of the changes they're making, trying to protect you, ladies and gentlemen, from the bad guys, as we've talking about, or for people that maybe don't have your best interest at heart as it relates to financial advice. Of course, this is the new DOL fiduciary rules, and it's got a long name, but basically trying to help protect. And as Jonathan and I were talking before the break, it's made it a little messy and probably going to lead to greater confusion. What's not confusing is Jonathan's book, Jonathan Clements, Money Guide 2016. I counted 419 sections or specific tips that Jonathan gets to with his money guide, and it's outstanding. I love what he's done, and it's a great resource. The book is on the website, jonathanclements.com. So what do you say to my my comment or critique of, they didn't call me, by the way, at the department later on how to, you know, do this rule, Jonathan. I think that might have been a lot clearer if they just bifurcated and said, look, here's what we need, a fiduciary standard, period, for 401ks and similar employer-based plans, and then tackle the whole IRA thing separately.
Yeah, that might have been a better approach, but having done what they've done, I have one small glimmer of hope.
Okay.
Which is this. I mean, you know, the rules say that, you know, these various things are possible, you know, allowable, such as,
right,
selling proprietary funds. But, you know, I've also, you know, worked at Citigroup, and I've seen what, you know, how the lawyers and the compliance officers work, and they tend to be pretty cautious. So
that's true. That is a good point.
My hope and maybe even my hunch is that, you know, the lawyers and compliance people at all these big brokerage firms are looking at the rules,
right,
saying, yeah, you know, the rules say that this is allowable, but the fact is, if we do it, we're still going to have to justify that it's in the client's best interest.
That's a great point, Jonathan.
And wouldn't it be just a whole lot simpler to say, nah, we're not going to do these things?
Well, there's definitely, you know, some good arguments could be made about certain types of investments that just simply, you know, are a challenge for the firms to wield their compliance, but, you know, baton and keep them reined in. You know, another great example of that is some of these, and a lot of firms have gotten into some trouble with this, is the illiquid, non-publicly traded real estate investment trusts, the REITs. I mean, those things have been a real albatross, not only for the clients, but also for the brokers that have recommended them. And a lot of them have been inside of IRAs.
So just sort of one other thing, Dave, before we move on to any other topic, which is, even if, you know, the big brokerage firms, you know, the Merrill Lynch, the Morgan Stanley, and so on, say, okay, you know, we've seen the rules, even though all this stuff like, you know, selling proprietary funds, mm-hmm. selling non-traded REITs into IRAs is allowable, we can't really justify it. There's a legal risk here. Let's just be true fiduciaries. One of the things that ordinary investors should realize that even if a broker is behaving as a fiduciary when it comes to retirement accounts, and even if they're behaving as a fiduciary when it comes to a managed account, they are what's called duly registered, which means that even if they're acting in your best interest with some transactions, with other transactions, they're still only held to a suitability standard.
And therein lies additional confusion.
So, you know, one of the things that you're going to have to, as an investor, get in the habit of doing is saying to, you know, a Morgan Stanley or a Merrill Lynch broker, are you acting as a fiduciary standard? What do you mean by a fiduciary
exactly.
standard? And, you know, if you're acting only according to a suitability standard, could we do better here?
Well, you know, you raise a very another excellent point, Jonathan. And it's almost like the client has to come in with their own agreement that the advisor would sign and says, you're going to tell me anytime you're not acting in a fiduciary standard as defined as follows.
And I'm sure for a lot of listeners, they're just sitting there going, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it that complicated? And it's unfortunate because complexity like this causes people to say, you know, Wall Street, it's just the den of thieves, you know, I'm just going to leave my money in the bank. And of
right.
course, in the end, that is the worst possible decision. I mean, if you're going to accumulate significant wealth over time, you do need to find your way into the financial markets. You do need to own stocks and bonds and get out beyond savings accounts and CDs. But that does mean that you have to address these issues and you have to address them with your eyes wide open, because the last thing you want to do is just go and knock on the door of some local financial advisor without appreciating how your account is going to be handled.
Yeah, it's so on target, Jonathan. It's excellent, and there needs to be some sort of really a clarity that either is provided by financial firms and being forthright and saying, we act in this capacity, and here's what it means, and when we don't, we will tell you. You know, just to give you an example, we've got fiduciary standards, you know, it's everywhere. I mean, as a certified financial planner, fiduciary. Registered investment advisor, fiduciary. It's sometimes, and again, you're going from the client's perspective, golly, really, does it have to be this hard? But it's going to lend itself to a lot of confusion. And, you know, I hope that there's some clarity that can come. But I think, it's, as you said, it's hopefully going to be the attorneys, the compliance folks that help to massage this into something that ultimately is better for the consumer.
We can hope.
Yes, I know. Talk about a dramatic pause. That was pure. That was great. That was both literal and figurative in nature. That was excellent. Well, we'll take your pause, and I've got another subject to get to. Jonathan Clements is our guest today, financial writer and author of the book, Jonathan Clements Money Guide 2016, a great read, 419 tips for you on your money, all kinds of subjects. Excellent read, excellent resource, jonathanclements.com. We'll grab a break, and I want to get into, with all of this complexity, we're going to also dig in here a little bit to some of the rules of thumb and things that are supposed to make your life easier, things that you can rely on for some strategies, and maybe Jonathan and I will debunk some of those as well. Stay right there.
Having a place to go after school will make you a better student. Having an outlet to express yourself will make you a better artist. Having something to do together will make you a better family. At The Y, we're helping build better friends, listeners, writers, swimmers, scientists, and musicians, one chance at a time. Give the gift of opportunity. Support The Y.
For more information on what your Y does and how you can help, visit vfymca.org/give.
The Y, for a better us.
Hey, David Holland here. I'd like you to listen closely to a few words from my good friends, Tony Papandrea and Florida Hospital Hospice Care Foundation.
Hi, I'm Tony, chairman of the Florida Hospital Hospice Care Foundation. If you need more income now with some tax advantages and would like to leave a future benefit for Florida Hospital Hospice Care, a charitable gift annuity might be a good fit for you. Learn how to include charitable gift annuities in your financial planning. They could benefit you with higher tax advantage yields than you are getting now, and benefit Florida Hospital Hospice Care later. Call us at 386-586-4440 for more information.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dan Drake. My staff and I have enjoyed delivering excellent, lasting dental care to countless patients for many years. We are a modern dental practice offering a full range of services, including cosmetic, implant, Invisalign, and general dentistry. Additionally, I am one of only a few dentists licensed to perform IV sedation, sleep dentistry to help those of you who are anxious. My belief and commitment is to deliver outstanding dental care and positive patient experiences. We look forward to serving you. If you have a dental question or concern, don't hesitate to call us at 386-673-1611 or visit AtlanticDentists.com.
Hi, this is David Holland. I've been going to Dr. Drake's office for over 20 years. I trust them, and you can too.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your financial portfolio prepared for such a correction? What about inflation? What's your plan when that gallon of milk or gallon of gasoline costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has all the answers to questions like these and practical steps to help you hedge against these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland.
Hey, we're back. Jonathan Clements on the line, author of Jonathan Clements Money Guy 2016. JonathanClements.com is a website. And you know, again, we talked about the increasing complexity, Jonathan, of the financial world. And so in the face of that, sometimes people will look to any shortcut or the more, you know, recent hip term of hack for this, hack for that, and how to hack your way to doing things in a shortcut manner. And we talk about financial rules of thumb. And so my question for you, are any of them any good, like, you know, trying to save 10% every year and things like that? What are your thoughts about trying to make it, you know, again, easier in the face of this increasing complexity?
Well, as you know, David, on my website recently, I tackled five of these rules of thumb, and one of them is indeed this rule that you should save 10% of your pre-tax income every year. And it's not a bad rule of thumb. I mean, you know, particularly given the typical American saves more like 5%, so saving 10% would be a vast improvement. But you need to sort of dig into the number for two reasons. I mean, first, when people say you should save 10% of your pre-tax income every year, what they're talking about is the amount that you should save towards retirement. And the 10% assumes that you're saving for 30 or 35 years. For anybody who delays saving for retirement until, say, age 40, you know, they're going to need to save substantially more of their income every year in order to have a comfortable retirement. Moreover, the 10% savings rate is based on a world where we have, you know, moderately good investment returns. And I'm not sure we're going to have that going forward.
Right.
You look at bond yields, they're very low right now. You're not getting much of a premium, if any, over inflation.
Right.
Meanwhile, we know that the stock market is expensive by historical standards. You know, when I talk to people today, I'd say, you know, if inflation is 2% in the years ahead, you know, maybe stocks will return 6%.
Yeah.
And bonds, well, bonds, you know, if you own corporate bonds rather than government bonds, maybe you can get 3%. So you put that together, you have sort of a 50-50 mix, and you're at 4.5% in a world where inflation is running at 2%.
Yeah.
So if we're getting returns like that, instead of saving 10% every year, maybe you need to be saving more like 12 to 15% towards retirement.
That's a good point. Yeah, the margins are thin, and people scratch their heads and go, boy, what do I do? And I'm, of course, say, look, let's not give up. Let's figure out a solution. But I think that putting away is, I'm going to see you and raise you, Jonathan. I think put away as much as you can. And it is, you know, these rules of thumb, of course, are just meant as a place to get you thinking. I think that's really the value. And not necessarily to be intended as specific, you know, advice for anybody. And a lot of times people have varying incomes, and there's a lot of factors. You're right about that. How about life insurance? I know that was another one you mentioned, you know, that you're supposed to, you know, buy a certain amount of life insurance as a multiple of your income.
Yeah, the rule I've heard most often is that you should have life insurance equal to 5 to 7 times income. This is actually one of the worst rules of thumb out there. And the reason is this. I mean, the amount of life insurance that you should have depends heavily on your family situation. If you're single and nobody depends on you financially, you probably don't need any life insurance. I mean, you know, yeah, if you die tomorrow, it'd be sad, but you're not going
right.
to be leaving anybody in the financial lurch.
Right.
By
right.
contrast, if you're, you know, a parent of young children and you're the family's main breadwinner, you know, and you're thinking about, okay, you know, if I die, how's my spouse going to cope with the mortgage? How's he or she going to cope with living expenses in the years ahead? How is he or she going to pay for college costs? You may need not 5 to 7 times income, but maybe 14 or 15 times income, and maybe even more in terms of the amount of term life insurance that you buy.
Good point.
So this is really not a good rule of thumb.
Excellent. Well, Jonathan, we're out of time again. We run quick. Jonathan Clements, ladies and gentlemen, financial advisor and author. The new book, Jonathan Clements Money Guide 2016. A great read, great resource, jonathanclements.com. You know, we'll do it again, Jonathan. Thank you very much for your time today.
It's been my pleasure.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.